in the air left field. That should get the job done. Melendez behind it. McKinstry tags. There'll be no throw to the plate. A sacrifice fly from Spencer Torkelson gives the Tigers a 3-0 lead.
Really good at bat.
And the Royals do not score a single run for Zach Greinke. How do you win games as a starting pitcher when your offense doesn't score runs for you? And, of course, you can't get the win if you don't go five innings. Zach was back from a shoulder strain, and he goes four innings yesterday. Three of the four innings he cruised, gave up a couple runs in the second inning. He's now 1-10 with the loss as the Royals shut out 3-0. Matt Cotrero on Greinke's return.
It's kind of what we expected. It's been 15, 16 days, so we knew it wasn't going to, you know, be a deep outing. You know, it looks like he struggled a little bit with his command. You know, he was around the zone plenty, but just probably a lower strike percentage than he's used to or we're used to seeing. But again, I mean, he minimized, you know, four innings, two runs. I mean, he gave us a good chance.
Royals are now 28-70 on the season. Yeah. Let that sink in for a second. 28-70, lose 3 out of 4 to Detroit. They hit the road to start a 3-game series against the Yankees, who are struggling and almost, I don't even know, the other day the Yankees were only like a game out of last place.
They were tied for last place with the Red Sox at the start of the week when I looked at the standings. So, But they all have winning records, but
yeah.
They'd all be in first place in the American League Central, but
yeah, the Twins are only, what, 3 games, I think, over. Let me pull that up real quick. The standings, because I have not followed it as closely as I maybe should, but when my team is 28-70, it's really
do.
Yeah. I will say that the Orioles last night took over first place in the American League East. They beat the Rays 4-3, the first of 4 games between the top 2 teams in the American League. Rays started the year, of course, what was it, 10-0 or something like that? And now the Rays are in second place, and the Yankees are in last place. They have a winning record, and they are 9.5 out. The Red Sox are in fourth, the Rays are in second, the Blue Jays are in third, and if the Yankees are in the American League Central, they have a half-game lead and be in first place, and instead they're in last place. So it's last-place Yankees versus last-place Royals.
There we go.
I mean, it's all the same, right? Yankees have 22 more wins, but they're both in last place.
If you ain't first, you're last.
That's right. That's right. Texas has a 4-game lead over Houston in the AL West. The Twins, only team with a winning record in the Central, have a 2-game lead over the Guardians. The Braves have a 10.5-game lead over the Phillies. And the Marlins, NL East. The Brewers have a 2.5-game lead over the Reds in the NL Central. Dodgers now have a 2-game lead over the D-backs and the Giants. And the Padres still got to figure some things out. Whole big old payroll and everything else. They're 5 games under .500. So, Alec Marsh is on the hill for the boys in blue tonight in New York. Isn't that at New York?
Yes.
Okay. So Alec Marsh, 0-3, ERA at 5.40, but he struck out 11 Rays last time out in 6 innings of work. So there you have that. That's it with the Royals. I'm done with that. Moving on. By the way, Josh Eilert, the head coach of West Virginia men's basketball, Osmond, Kansas native, coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. Summer state baseball tournaments. We've got a local team that's going to play for a state championship.
Yeah, the Peewee State Baseball Tournament semis last night. The Beloit Grasshoppers winning over Hanover 3-1, and Concordian Heights beat Osborne 13-3. That was the first loss of the season here this summer for Osborne. So they'll go for third place against Hanover at 7 o'clock at Meyer Field, and the Beloit Grasshoppers are the team that will be playing for the state championship here tonight against Concordia Knights at 8:30 there at Jensen Field. So that's a look at what happened Peewee State Tournament there last night. American Legion.
Well, let me stop you.
Okay.
The Beloit... only one team has won the state Pee Wee Championship from Beloit, from what I understand. And I remember this because when I was coaching our kids, it had been cool to have been the second. And it's 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Smith was a big part of that, of course. Rest his soul, not with us anymore. And they won it all in 2012. And so the Beloit Grasshoppers could be the second team from Beloit to win a state championship in Pee Wee baseball.
There we go. We're pulling for them.
Hopefully,
yeah,
absolutely.
We can get it done.
Yeah, no doubt.
Maybe we should not be so mean to the Concordia Knights, but we're pulling for the Grasshoppers here today, right?
No, it's all right. I don't live in Concordia. It's okay.
That's good.
Yeah, I don't know those people on that team, so nothing. No ill will. Just, yes. Okay, so you know people in Beloit. You going to cheer for Beloit? No, you're from Concordia. You're cheering for the Concordia team.
Yeah,
you might not even know anybody on the team. You're like, well, Concordia against Beloit. I got to always cheer for Concordia. I'm from Beloit. Well, I'm always cheering Beloit against Concordia, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And if you're going the other way, you're a traitor.
American Legion State Tournament started yesterday as well there in Concordia, and it started early in the morning and got done very, very late at night. There were six games yesterday. Garnett beat Concordia in the first game 11-3, Seneca over Norton 9-4, Beloit with a nice first round win over Corning 6-1, and Iola beat Colby 6-5. And their two elimination games last night, it was Concordia over Norton 5-3, and Corning beat Colby 16-5. So those are the scores yesterday. Norton and Colby eliminated. Winner's bracket gets back underway, and it's just started here at 9 o'clock this morning with Garnett against Seneca, and Beloit will take on Iola around 11:30. And elimination games after that will be at 2 and 4:30. Corning will take on the Garnett-Seneca loser, and then Concordia plays the Beloit-Iola loser at 4:30. And then semis tonight, Garnett-Seneca winner to take on the Beloit-Iola winner at 7 o'clock. So five games on the docket today. You can find that full bracket at ncksports.com for the American Legion State Tournament in Concordia. Also, K-18 State Tournament starts tomorrow at Lucas. Smith Center Red plays Phillipsburg at 9 o'clock. Concordia F&A is in the tournament against Colby at 11:30.
Russell, I love that name.
Well, I thought F&A, I was going to be able to stop saying it because they lost to Russell in the first round of the region tournament. But Russell apparently was playing with an ineligible player.
Really?
So they were booted from the state tournament.
Whoops.
And the team they beat got their spot. So Concordia F&A, when I don't say it fast.
Are you saying that something wasn't done correctly and it was connected to Russell?
I guess.
Stunningly, shockingly. Okay, I'll leave that there.
So they play Concordia F&A, plays Colby at 11:30, and then Beloit Red plays Scott City at 2, Clay Center against Waukini at 4:30. That full bracket for K-18 State also at ncksports.com. K-18 State again starting tomorrow in Lucas.
Brody Schroeder went seven innings yesterday for the Legion team, the Musties, and winning 6-1. So best of luck to our area teams competing, whether it's first or third place games or just starting out a tournament. K-18, of course, this weekend, and the Legion already underway, as you mentioned, and then the Pee Wee baseball tournament finishing up tonight.
Yes.
So we're almost to school starting again. That's what that all means, and kids really love being reminded of that.
I don't love being reminded about that.
I know you don't.
Based on how my summer's been going.
Yeah, right.
That, so, yeah.
That means your birthday's coming up.
Yeah, means my birthday's coming up. Means that, I've not had a lot. I've had, two times a week trying to get this dang shoulder going the right way again. And it's, a little bit too quick of a summer, but we'll make it through.
Well, you don't really have a choice.
Like I said in that blog I put out, you can't pick the time this stuff happens. So
no, you cannot.
And this is a better time than if it would have happened in basketball season. So
yeah.
I've been through that before. So
yes, you have. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. So you're turning 40 coming up here. You're, well, straight up a month now, right?
Today's the 21st.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you're going to be 40, the 4-0.
1 month of my 30s left. Let's do it.
Yeah, Barb Pollin's turning 50 tomorrow, so she better enjoy today.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother club tomorrow. I'm pretty brave of a husband to say the age of his wife coming up in a big number like that.
I think
in a related story, divorce is filed on Monday. But anyway, happy birthday, Barb Pollin, turning 50 tomorrow. Few things I want to get to here. Here's K-State's men's basketball conference schedule for the Big 12. It's going to be different this year. Visits by new Big 12 opponents BYU and Central Florida, along with home-and-home matchups with Iowa State, Kansas, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia, highlight K-State's home-and-away opponents for the upcoming Big 12 men's basketball season. Big 12 schools will continue to play an 18-game schedule with 9 games at home, 9 on the road, with the 14-team format this upcoming season. In addition to its permanent home-and-home series with KU in the Sunflower Showdown, K-State will also have a home-and-home series against BYU, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. In all, the 9-game home Big 12 schedule will include visits by Baylor, BYU, Central Florida, Iowa State, KU, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, and West Virginia going to Manhattan. The Wildcats will make trips to BYU, Cincinnati, so Cincinnati's not coming to Manhattan this year, Houston, who's not coming to Manhattan this year, Iowa State, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Texas, Texas Tech, and West Virginia. So West Virginia will be a home and home for K-State. So Josh Eilert will be against K-State twice this year, home and then at Morgantown. And that also means that, let's see here, K-State would not play 2 games against Texas. I know that. And
Oklahoma wasn't part of that 2-game thing either.
Two games either.
Let's see here. The five schools that Kansas will face off against at home and on the road: Baylor, Houston, K-State, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State. So KU's only going to play Texas once. In addition to these 10 matchups, KU will be at home to BYU, Cincinnati, TCU, and Texas. The KU Jayhawks will travel to Central Florida, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and West Virginia for road contests. That doesn't look like too bad of a road schedule there for KU on that part of things. Dates, tip-off times, and TV information will be released at a later date. Also, they did the same thing for the women's basketball schedules in regards to who they're going to play. But once again, the tip-off times and dates will be released later on. The basketball tournament, we mentioned the other day that KU Mastery barely won. Former KU Jayhawks on that team. K-State with former Wildcats. Their team is Purple and Black Emaw. They won last night in the TBD in the first round there at Wichita, 72-59. When will young people learn? Minnesota Vikings rookie wide receiver Jordison Addison was cited yesterday morning for speed and reckless driving after an officer clocked him driving 140 miles per hour on a freeway just outside of St. Paul, Minnesota, according to an incident report from the Minnesota State Patrol. Jordan Addison is 21 years of age. He's a 23rd overall pick of this year's draft. Was not arrested, but the investigation, the incident is ongoing. In a statement, the Vikings said, "We are aware of last night's traffic incident involving Jordan Addison and are gathering additional information." According to the police report, a patrol officer was traveling eastbound on Interstate 94 just after 3 a.m. when they observed a driver in a Lamborghini traveling 140 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. The trooper made a traffic stop and identified Addison as the driver. Listen, all you got to do is look at the Henry Ruggs situation. During his second season, he caused a car crash that killed a 23-year-old woman and her dog. He was released by the Raiders the same day. He was accused of driving up to 156 miles per hour down residential streets. He was cited for a DUI. And then in May, just a few months ago, Ruggs formally pled guilty to a felony count of driving under influence, resulting in death, and a misdemeanor count of vehicular manslaughter. He's expected to serve a sentence of 3 to 10 years in Nevada State Prison. And in essence, his NFL career is over before it basically started. And he was a first-round draft pick. And now Jordison Addison, you know, goes 140 miles per hour in a 55 mile an hour zone. He's lucky he didn't hit anybody and kill anybody. You know, here's the thing. I know these situations are slightly different, but they're very similar. One guy's going 156 down residential streets. Another's going 140 down a highway. Okay. Neither one is acceptable. Okay. But here's the thing. Jordan Addison, everybody's going to sit here and they're immediately going to say, well, Henry Ruggs is a worse person. No, it's to me, no. Jordan Addison just got luckier.
And it didn't hit anybody.
Just like Bob Huggins, yeah. It doesn't mean that he's a better person because he didn't kill anybody when he was drunk. It just means he got lucky when he was driving drunk. Because there's others that drive drunk and do kill people and have to deal with it for the rest of their life. So, yeah, I mean, Ruggs was released right away. Would he have been released right away had he not run into anybody? Of course not. Is Jordan Addison going to be released by the Minnesota Vikings after this happened? Of course not.
No.
Plus the first round picks. But Ruggs killed somebody. So thus, he's released.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously that's different, but it is about luck.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Right.
There's a lot of things that are about that.
Sure.
You know, like you
right.
said, with Bob Huggins, like there's been plenty of guys like.
Both were equally irresponsible.
You know, people get multiple DUIs and still play on a
yeah.
team. Eric Warfield, I'm talking
sure.
about him, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's
mm-hmm.
like there's been that happen where. You know, you got lucky and nothing happened other than you got pulled over and got a DUI.
Right.
And so, you know, there's mistakes that were made there, but you didn't lose your job because of it.
Right.
And, you know, mistakes were made and huge mistakes were made with Ruggs and he's done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of consequences for each action that happens. And
right.
You know. Luckily for Jordan Addison, his are probably only going to be legal consequences.
And luckily for Henry Ruggs, his career is over.
Yeah.
And in jail. The Washington Commanders have been sold and no longer belong to Dan Snyder and his family. NFL owners unanimously approved the sale of the Commanders to a group led by Josh Harris. The Harris Group is paying $6.05 billion with a B. For the franchise, Snyder was the majority owner of Washington's franchise since 1999 when Snyder led a group that purchased the Washington franchise for $800 million 24 years ago. 24 years later, he sells the team for just over $6 billion, which means he got a 700%, and everybody in his group got a 700% return on their investment. That's not shabby. It sets a new record for a North American sports franchise, just over $6 billion. Also tied to this, Mary Jo White concluded her investigation into the Commanders organization, stating that the Commanders withheld approximately $11 million in revenue that should have been shared with other teams. The investigation also found that Dan Snyder sexually harassed a former team employee. White also noted that the Commanders failed to fully cooperate with her investigation. The NFL is ordering former Commanders owner Daniel Snyder to pay a $60 million fine as part of the closing sale. Now, I find this somewhat humorous. He just sold the team for $6 billion, and he slapped with a $60 million fine that comes out of his proceeds. Do you think Daniel Snyder really learned a lesson from all this?
No.
No. No. It's a guy that had money. Sometimes you got to, a lot of times you got to have money to make money. He was able to put together a group, buy a team for $800 million. 24 years later, sell it for $6 billion, a 700% return on his investment. Harassed team employees, did things the wrong way, didn't follow the rules, withheld revenue from the league, didn't cooperate with an investigation. And, oh, by the way, the Commanders slash Redskins, they were not very good. I think it was 2 playoff wins in 24 years, 6 playoff appearances, never made it to the Super Bowl. Imagine what the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be worth at some point. Imagine what the Dallas Cowboys are going to be worth if Jerry Jones sells them. Imagine, of course, what the Yankees are worth or the Lakers are worth. I mean, this is insane. The Commanders, I know it's a big-time city, the capital, blah, blah, blah. But $6 billion for a franchise that hasn't been very good for 24 years, what are you going to pay for a franchise in a major market that is actually good? I mean, I've been telling you over and over for over and over and over and over and on and on and on and on that whenever you hear the owners complain about money, when you side with the owners versus the players, you don't understand the full picture. The owners are billionaires with a B, a capital B, I-L-L-I-O-N-S. They're billionaires. So when people aren't in the stands, it affects their bottom line a little bit, sure. Do you think they lose sleep over it? I doubt it. Now, do you think people lose sleep over, hey, I'm a usher and now I'm not, they've cut back because we don't have enough people at the stands and so they don't need as many people to work a Royals game because we're not very good? Yeah, those are the people affected. The little guy or little gal is always affected, and the rich, rich, rich. And Dan Snyder, this is a slap on the wrist. And you may say, $60 million is not a slap on the wrist. It is when you get $6 billion.
It's 1% for every dollar.
Right, that's what it is.
Yeah. Is what it is.
It's one penny. So yeah. It's 1%.
Yeah,
it's a 1% fine is what it is.
It's 1 cent for every dollar.
Yeah, 1%. In golf, the British Open began with round one yesterday at Royal Liverpool in Hoylake, and Christo Lamprecht of South Africa, along with Tommy Fleetwood of England, and Emiliano Grillo of Argentina, all tied for first at 5 under. But that has changed. Brian Harman from the U.S. of A. is 10 under. He shot 6 under today. Tommy Fleetwood is through 2 holes. He's 5 under. Shubh Hankar Sharmar is 4 under through 15. Stuart Sink is 4 under through 8. And Jordan Smith, 3 under through 4. And what else we got here? I want to scroll through. Rory McIlroy is 1 under. He's done for the day. Max Homa's done, 1 under. Jason Day, 1 under through 4. Brooks Koepka, 1 under through 3. And I want to see where Gary Woodland is as I'm going to scroll all the way down here. And that's not good when I keep scrolling and trying to find Gary Woodland. He is plus 2 after 2 rounds. So I don't even know if he'll make the cut or not. So the British Open, round 2 continuing there over at Royal Liverpool. And before we get to Josh Eilert, the head coach of West Virginia, Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark confirmed last week at Big 12 Media Days that the conference plans to explore playing Thursday and Friday night college football games under its new TV deal. And that came as a bit of a surprise in the Texas coaching community. Dusty and I have said this for years, and KU's been having some Friday night football games. And I understand why they have them, why they schedule them in the non-con. I understand why the Big 12 and other conferences want to have games, standalone games on different nights, so you're not stuck in the clutter of a long schedule on Saturday. I get it. I understand it. However, we don't like it. Dusty and I don't like it. We don't like that. We think Friday night should be reserved for high school football across the country. It doesn't matter what we think, but we're not the only ones. Mm-hmm. We're not the only ones. Texas High School Coach Association Executive Director Joe Martin said Sunday it was shocking to read that the Big 12 is considering Friday evening football, a time usually reserved for high school football. Martin said he's yet to speak with Brett Yormark, who is now in year two on the job as commissioner of the Big 12, but hopes to in the future about the Texas High School Association's concerns about college football further infringing on a space that had long been reserved for high school football in the Lone Star State. Now, I will say this. I'm going to read this comment, but I'm going to preface this. You know, we hear a lot of people from Texas, well, everything's bigger in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas. And a lot of people feel like Texas always thinks that their stuff don't stink and they're better than everybody. And there's something to that, all right? I'm not going to disagree with it. However, in this case, this is an accurate statement. Texas is different, Martin said. I don't know if you guys have ever traveled outside the state or had anything to do with any other program outside the state. We're different. Our communities still go and support our teams. The more and more any football is out there on Friday nights, college, NFL, we're opposed to that. Our association will be very vocal about the way we look upon it. End of quote. It is different. High school football in Texas is way different than high school football in Kansas. It is not even comparable. All you gotta do is watch Friday Night Lights. It is completely, I mean, it is insane. Some of the high school stadiums in Texas are like small college stadiums. They're amazing facilities. Mm-hmm. Lots of money into these high school programs. High school football is gigantic and huge and large in Texas, bigger than a lot of states. So I would agree that in this case, Texas is different. And they obviously are like, dude, this Friday night high school football is gigantically important to us. And now you're going to infringe upon that, and we're not very happy about it. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you for speaking up. Not going to change anything, but good for you for speaking up. And it's nice to know that you and I know we're not the only ones on talking about this or not liking it. There are many people that don't it, especially, but people that aren't tied to high school sports don't care and just like, whatever, it doesn't bother me, not in my backyard. But it is not, I would like the Kansas State High School Activity Association to step up and say the same thing.
They didn't have a statement, but when Yormark had that, they had something on Twitter
right away about, we don't support this.
I didn't see that.
Okay, well, good.
They did have a deal on Twitter like immediately after he said
good. Okay, yeah. I did not see that, so good.
I don't know exactly what it said, but good. They're like, this should be reserved for
very good
high school sports.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I did not see that. So that is very, very good. I think every high school state association, sports associations should be like Texas and Kansas and others saying, listen, we should not be having college games on Friday nights. You know, you could play it Thursday. And that was junior high football, but high school football obviously is much bigger than junior high football. So high school football on a Friday night. Now, one of the little caveats to this, though, is, and this ties in, official shortage that we have in Kansas and other states. Mm-hmm. And you saw last year, we saw some games move to a Thursday or a Saturday, high school football, a few to a Thursday in our area, even week one last year. Mm-hmm. So if you say, well, college football games need to just stay away from Friday night. So if they move it to a Thursday night, well, you might have more and more high school football games being moved to a Thursday night because of shortage of officials, and then you're going to have the same conundrum. But in this situation, they're talking about Thursday and Friday night games for college football in the Big 12. I'm all for Thursday. Stay away from Friday, just like this Texas Activity Association executive director.
Yeah, Thursday's been happening for quite a while. K-State plays Oklahoma State on a Friday night this year, and it's like, okay, whatever. Do what you got to do, I guess, to be the show in town, but we'll never be a fan of it.
No, I'm with you.